Hey everyone, welcome back to another deep dive with Think and Act Locally. And today we're diving into something that's particularly relevant to all of you in Deer Park, LaPorte, and Pasadena.
Oh, absolutely.
The history and the purpose of American education.
Okay.
And we'll be using John Taylor Gatto's The Underground History of American Education to guide our exploration.
Great book.
Yeah. If you've ever felt like something's a bit off about the way our schools work,
right,
this deep dive might just give you some aha moments as we unpack Gatto's thought-provoking ideas.
Yeah. You know, Gatto's perspective is definitely controversial.
Yeah.
But it really does push us to think critically about why our schools are structured the way they are. And he makes this really interesting argument that the system that we have today wasn't some happy accident, but rather a very deliberate project that was heavily influenced by models like the Prussian system.
Yeah.
And, you know, the needs of industrialists.
Yeah.
And understanding those influences can be really empowering for communities like yours that are trying to make informed decisions about their own schools.
So picture this. Instead of a place of learning and growth, Gatto asks us to imagine the classroom as a tool for social control.
Wow.
That's a bold statement.
Yeah.
Right? Where does he even begin to make that case?
Well, he starts by taking us back to early American education.
Okay.
And it was a very different landscape compared to what we see today.
Yeah.
Back then, learning was largely self-directed. Apprenticeships were really common as a way to learn. Skills and literacy rates were surprisingly high. Individuals really took responsibility for their own education.
Wow. So like Benjamin Franklin?
Exactly.
Yeah.
He was largely self-taught.
Right.
He went on to become, obviously, a famous writer, an inventor, a statesman.
Yeah, founding father.
Founding father, exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, his self-directed learning allowed him to really explore his interests and develop these practical skills that ultimately, you know, allowed him to contribute so much to the founding of our nation.
Wow, it makes you wonder, what shifted?
Yeah.
What happened?
Big question.
To go from that to what we have now.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, one of the key figures in that shift that Gatto points to is Horace Mann.
Okay.
And he really championed the adoption of the Prussian model of education in America.
Yeah.
He went to Prussia, he visited briefly, and he came back so impressed by their system's emphasis on obedience.
Okay.
And the thorough training of them teachers.
That's interesting.
But the thing is, you have to remember that that model was designed for a completely different society than ours, you know, with very different goals.
Right.
It was really geared toward creating an obedient citizenry rather than fostering individual potential.
So control versus creativity or development.
It's about control. And that distinction is really crucial, especially for communities like yours.
Yeah.
You know, in Southeast Houston that are really trying to reclaim their own educational narrative.
So we've got this shift happening. And then industrialists enter the scene, like Andrew Carnegie, the Rockefellers, with all of their influence. And they saw education as a way to create a workforce that was suited to the demands of a growing industrial economy.
Yeah.
So it's like schools were molded to operate like factories.
Exactly.
Bells, schedules, standardized tasks. I mean, does that ring a bell for anyone?
It does. And that's precisely Gatto's point. Those seemingly mundane elements of school life actually reflect a much deeper philosophy. And that philosophy prioritizes things like obedience and conformity and efficiency over critical thinking and creativity.
Oh.
So it's about producing workers who can follow instructions, you know, not innovators who are going to question the status quo.
Oh, that's
That has huge implications for the kind of society we create right here in Southeast Houston and beyond.
Yeah. Chilling thought.
It is.
We've talked about the influence of the Prussian model in the industrialists, but I know Gatto also brings in this concept of social efficiency.
Yes.
Can you unpack that a little for us?
Yeah, it's kind of a clinical term, but it really gets to the heart of Gatto's argument.
Okay.
Social efficiency essentially means that schools were being used to sort students into their predetermined roles in society.
Wow.
And there were educational theorists like Elwood P. Cubberley. Yeah. And Alexander Inglis, who were very open about this, they believe that schools should be used to manage and control the population.
Wow.
Essentially turning kids into efficient cogs in this larger societal machine.
Mm.
And this concept was also reflected in something called the Gary Plan, which was this experimental school model that was heavily funded by the Rockefellers.
Oh, wow.
And it really focused on vocational training and having a factory-like schedule.
So the epitome of this.
Yeah, exactly. And there was a lot of pushback against the Gary plan, especially in New York City, where parents and students saw it as a blatant attempt to turn schools into factories that churned out compliant workers.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so if schools were being used to mold students into specific roles,
yeah,
how does psychology factor into all of this?
Well, Gatto traces this influence of psychology on education all the way back to Wilhelm Wundt in his work.
Yeah.
And Wundt, you know, he saw the mind as a machine that could be studied and controlled.
Interesting.
And of course, this concept was readily embraced by those who were seeking to engineer a very specific type of citizen, right?
Right.
And then you have John B. Watson and behaviorism, which further reinforce this approach by focusing on conditioning and controlling behavior through rewards and punishments.
Oh, wow.
And these ideas became incredibly popular in the 20th century.
Yeah.
And they really contributed to this view that children could be shaped and molded to fit these predetermined roles in society.
That's pretty bleak.
Yeah.
What does he mean by demoralizing school procedure?
That's one of Gatto's most powerful phrases, I think. And he's arguing that many school procedures were designed to break the spirit of children who didn't conform
Wow.
to the system. So imagine a child who learns differently, who questions authority, or who just doesn't fit neatly into the boxes created by the system.
Right.
And these children were often labeled as troublemakers or slow learners or worse. And they were punished and ostracized and ultimately demoralized by the system that didn't really recognize or value their unique strengths.
Heartbreaking.
It is.
Yeah. So we've got this historical backdrop, you know, a shift from self-directed learning to a system focused on control, influenced by Prussian models, industrialists, and these psychological theories that emphasize shaping behavior.
Mm-hmm.
What does this all mean for us here in Southeast Houston?
Right.
You know, what are some modern examples that reflect these ideas about social control and education that we see today?
Well, one example that Gatto points to is the new math movement.
Okay.
And he really criticizes this for intentionally excluding parents from the decision-making process.
Mm.
And this approach to education, where experts dictate the curriculum and the methods without input from the community, is a trend that continues today.
Right.
We see it in the emphasis on standardized testing. The vast amount of data that's collected on students and the push for social-emotional learning programs, which, you know, while they're often presented as beneficial, they can also be seen as tools for shaping student attitudes and behaviors to align with certain social and political agendas.
This all raises a really important question for our listeners in Deer Park, LaPorte, and Pasadena.
Yeah.
What kind of education do we want for our children?
Yeah.
Are we empowering them to think critically and independently? Or are we simply preparing them to be obedient workers in a system that doesn't really value their individuality?
Big questions.
Yeah. And those are questions that, you know, Think and Act Locally really wants to help you answer.
Absolutely.
Because we believe that informed and engaged citizens like you can make a real difference in shaping the future of education in your community.
That's right. Gatto's work is a call to action.
Yeah.
He wants us to be aware of these historical forces, to understand how they continue to shape our schools, and to take action to create a system that truly serves the needs of our children and our communities.
We've covered a lot of ground in this first part of our deep dive.
We have.
Talking about the historical shift from self-directed learning to a system focused on control.
Right.
And we've begun to connect those historical forces to modern trends in education, but we're just getting started.
We are.
In the next part, we'll delve deeper into how these ideas played out in classrooms and in curricula across the country.
Yes.
And we'll explore the role of government in enforcing this system of social control and examine the impact these shifts have had on teachers and students alike.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too.
Should be good.
So stay tuned for part two of our deep dive into the underground history of American education right here on Think and Act Locally.
And for our listeners in Southeast Houston, remember that understanding these historical forces is the first step towards reclaiming your educational narrative.
Yes.
Think and Act Locally is here to provide you with the knowledge and resources you need to make informed decisions about the future of education in your community.
Absolutely. And we'll see you next time.
You know, when we talk about the influence of industry on education, it's not just about, you know, the structure of schools
right.
with the bells and the schedules mimicking factories. It's also about the content that's being taught. The curriculum itself really reflects these forces.
Yeah. And the first part, we touched on the Gary Plan.
Right.
That experimental model funded by the Rockefellers.
Yes.
And it really seems to embody that factory style approach to education, doesn't it?
It did. It was all about efficiency. you know, churning out students that were prepared for very specific roles in the workforce.
Yeah.
Heavy emphasis on vocational training, a rigid schedule.
Yeah, you mentioned that parents and students in New York City really pushed back against it.
They did. They saw it as a blatant attempt to turn schools into factories churning out workers,
right,
rather than nurturing well-rounded individuals.
It's interesting how those debates keep recurring throughout history.
Mm-hmm.
Shows that we're still wrestling with those fundamental questions about the purpose of education.
Yes, sir.
So we've got industry pushing for a workforce that's obedient and efficient.
Right.
We've got psychology providing the tools to shape young minds.
Mm-hmm.
Where does government fit into all of this?
Well, Gatto argues that the government plays a key role in enforcing the system of social control through education, and he points to the rise of compulsory schooling laws,
okay,
which were passed in state after state throughout the late 19th and early 20th centuries.
So those laws basically made it mandatory for kids to go to school.
Exactly. And Gatto argues that these laws weren't solely about ensuring literacy or providing equal access to education. Mm. He believes they were also about controlling children and molding them into the kind of citizens that the government desired.
Yeah, he uses that phrase, demoralizing school procedure.
Right.
What exactly does he mean by that?
Well, he believes that many school procedures were intentionally designed to break the spirit of those who didn't conform.
Uh-huh.
So children who learned differently, who questioned authority, or just didn't fit neatly into those prescribed boxes were often targeted. Imagine a child who excels in hands-on learning but struggles with traditional classroom instruction.
Right.
Instead of nurturing that child's strengths, the system might label them as disruptive or slow, punishing them for not fitting the mold.
Right. And that can have a devastating impact.
Absolutely.
On a child's self-esteem and their love for learning.
It can.
Yeah, it makes you realize how important it is to recognize and celebrate different learning styles,
mm-hmm,
and to create a system that supports all students, not just the ones who fit a certain profile.
Right.
So we've got government, industry, and psychology all contributing to this system that Gatto describes. But how do these ideas actually manifest in the classroom?
Right.
How do they affect teachers and students on a day-to-day basis?
Well, one of the key figures Gatto discusses is William Torrey Harris, who was a very influential educational reformer in the late 19th century.
Okay.
And he was a staunch advocate for that Prussian model,
hmm,
and really saw schools as a way to instill obedience and conformity in the masses. He promoted standardized testing, age-graded classrooms, and a very rigid curriculum that left very little room for individual expression or creativity.
So did his ideas have a big impact on the development of American education?
They were incredibly influential. They were implemented in schools across the country, shaping the educational landscape for generations to come.
Wow.
And the impact on teachers was significant. They were increasingly seen as technicians,
okay,
responsible for delivering a predetermined curriculum and managing student behavior.
Yeah.
So their role was to enforce conformity, not to encourage independent thinking or questioning.
Wow. And what about the students? How did this shift affect them?
Well, Gatto argues that the students who suffered the most were those who didn't fit the mold.
Right.
The creative, curious, independent thinkers.
Yeah.
Those who didn't conform to the standardized expectations were often labeled as problematic or deficient.
Mm.
They were punished, ostracized, and ultimately demoralized by a system that failed to recognize their unique strengths and talents. And he provides some really heartbreaking examples in his book,
yeah,
of children who were essentially crushed by a system that was supposed to nurture their development.
It's a sobering thought.
It is.
Yeah, and it makes you wonder how many brilliant minds might have been stifled by a system that valued conformity over individuality.
Right.
Gatto highlights the cardinal principles of secondary education as another example.
Yes.
Of how this philosophy played out. Can you remind us what those were?
Absolutely. In 1918, the National Education Association, which was already gaining a lot of influence in shaping educational policy, published a report outlining these cardinal principles as the guiding light for high schoolers across the country.
Okay.
They were intended to provide a framework for secondary education.
Yeah.
But they really reflected this shift that we've been talking about, this move away from intellectual development and towards social efficiency and control.
I remember you mentioning that there were seven of these principles.
Right.
What were they specifically?
The seven principles were health command of fundamental processes worthy home membership vocation. Civic education were the use of leisure and ethical character.
Okay, some of those sound pretty reasonable on the surface.
They do, right?
Health, ethical character.
Yeah, those are important qualities.
Yeah, so what's the issue?
Well, the problem, according to Gatto, is that the way these principles were interpreted and implemented often reflected a very narrow and utilitarian view of education.
Mm.
So take history, for example.
Right.
Instead of teaching kids about history and literature and philosophy to help them develop critical thinking skills and a broad understanding of the world,
yeah,
they were often presented with a simplified and biased version of history that reinforced the status quo.
Mm-hmm.
Literature was often reduced to moralistic tales that promoted obedience and conformity.
Okay.
And philosophy was largely absent from the curriculum altogether.
So instead of fostering a love of learning and encouraging students to think for themselves, the focus was on shaping them into compliant citizens.
Mm-hmm.
Who wouldn't challenge the established order?
Right.
What about vocation? I mean, that seems like a pretty straightforward concept,
right?
Preparing kids for the workforce.
Yeah, but Gatto argues that the emphasis on vocation was often about slotting students into predetermined roles in the workforce.
Mm.
Rather than helping them discover their passions and reach their full potential.
Right. So it's about fitting into the system, not about individual growth and fulfillment.
Exactly.
Like they were trying to create a society where everyone knew their place and didn't question the way things were.
Right.
It's a very different vision of education than what many of us might envision for our own children in our communities.
It is. And that's the core of Gatto's critique. He believes that the American education system, as it evolved, was designed not to liberate minds and empower individuals, but to create a compliant and easily managed workforce that would serve the interests of those in power.
That's heavy.
It is, and it's a critique that demands our attention, especially as we think about the kind of education we want for our children and our community here in Southeast Houston.
So we've got the Gary Plan, the cardinal principles.
Mm-hmm.
Were there any other specific examples of how this philosophy of social control played out in the development of the American education system?
Another interesting example is the Chautauqua movement.
What?
The Chautauqua movement.
Right.
It was this wildly popular adult education movement that began in the late 19th century.
Mm.
Think traveling lectures, concerts, these elaborate tent cities devoted to learning that would pop up all over the country.
It sounds almost like a festival of learning.
It kind of was.
Was it connected to formal education in any way?
It wasn't directly tied to the formal school system.
Okay.
But Gatto sees it as a sort of precursor to this modern approach to education.
Mm.
He argues that the Chautauqua movement, while well-intentioned, really promoted a passive and consumerist approach to learning.
So instead of encouraging people to actively engage with ideas and think for themselves?
Mm, exactly. It presented them with this prepackaged, easily digestible version of knowledge that reinforced the status quo.
Okay.
So people were entertained and informed, but not necessarily challenged to think critically or question the information they were being given.
And he sees this as problematic because
it creates a society of passive consumers of information rather than active citizens who are capable of critical thinking and independent judgment.
Okay.
It's about receiving information rather than actively engaging with it and forming your own conclusions.
Right.
And this is particularly relevant today with the overwhelming amount of information
that
we're bombarded with from social media, the internet, 24-hour news cycles. It's more important than ever to be able to discern truth from falsehood, to question assumptions, and to think for ourselves.
That's such a critical point, especially in today's world where information is so readily available, but not always reliable.
Right.
It makes you realize how important it is to teach our kids those critical thinking skills so they can navigate this complex landscape and form their own informed opinions.
Exactly.
So the Chautauqua movement, while seemingly unrelated to formal education, actually provides a really interesting example of how these ideas about social control and the shaping of minds were really permeating American culture.
Precisely. It shows how pervasive these ideas were, even outside of the traditional classroom setting.
Right.
It highlights the shift towards a more passive form of learning where information is consumed rather than critically examined.
You know, it makes me think about how we consume information today. Social media, the internet, 24-hour news cycles.
Right.
It all feels so curated and controlled.
It does.
It's like we're constantly being fed information that's designed to keep us distracted and disengaged rather than informed and empowered.
Yeah.
It makes you wonder who's controlling the flow of information and what their agenda might be.
That's a really insightful observation, and it goes back to Gatto's point about the importance of critical thinking and independent judgment in today's world with so much information at our fingertips.
Right.
It's more important than ever to be able to evaluate sources, question assumptions, and think critically about the information we're being presented with.
Yeah.
These are essential skills for being informed and engaged citizens,
mm-hmm.
both in our local communities and in the world at large.
We've covered a lot of ground in this second part of our deep dive.
We have.
We talked about the influence of government industry and psychology on the development of the American education system.
Right.
We looked at specific examples like the Gary Plan, the Cardinal Principles, and the Chautauqua Movement.
Mm-hmm.
And we've also started to connect these historical forces to the challenges we face today.
Yeah.
In terms of information consumption and critical thinking. And it's a lot to process.
It is.
It can feel overwhelming.
It can, but it's important to remember that we're not just uncovering a problem here.
Right.
We're also exploring potential solutions. Gatto doesn't just offer a critique of the existing system.
Yeah.
He also presents a vision for a different kind of education.
Right.
One that prioritizes individual empowerment and the development of critical thinking skills.
So we're not just here to diagnose the problem. We're here to empower our listeners in Deer Park, LaPorte, and Pasadena to take action.
Absolutely.
And create positive change in their own communities. That's what Think and Act Locally is all about.
Exactly. And in the next part of our deep dive, we'll explore Gatto's ideas about alternative educational models and what we can learn from the past to create a system that truly empowers individuals and fosters a love of learning.
You know, it's easy to feel a little disheartened after the last two parts of our deep dive.
Yeah.
We uncovered some pretty concerning trends in the history of American education.
Right.
This shift away from self-directed learning towards a system that's really focused on control and conformity.
Mm-hmm.
It can feel a bit overwhelming, like this massive system is just too big to change.
It's understandable to feel that way, but, you know, Gatto doesn't just leave us with a critique.
Yeah.
He also offers some really compelling ideas about alternative educational models.
Okay.
And how we can learn from the past to create a more empowering and engaging learning experience for our kids.
So let's talk solutions.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of these alternative models that Gatto proposes? Where do we even begin to envision a different kind of education?
Well, one of the key things he emphasizes is the importance of self-directed learning, which was much more common in early American education.
Right, like Benjamin Franklin.
Exactly. Remember our conversation about him.
Yeah, good old Ben. He seemed to do pretty well for himself with that approach.
He did.
But how do you structure self-directed learning? It sounds a bit chaotic, like just letting kids run wild with their education.
Well, that's where things like apprenticeships and mentorships come in.
Okay.
Gatto believes that learning should be integrated into real-life experiences, not confined to the classroom. So imagine a young person who's passionate about carpentry, for example, instead of just reading about it in a textbook.
Right.
They could actually be apprenticed to a skilled carpenter, learning the craft through hands-on experience and guidance from a mentor.
That makes a lot more sense.
Right.
It's about connecting learning to real-world applications and allowing students to discover their passions through direct engagement.
Exactly. It's about fostering a love of learning by making it relevant and engaging.
Right. It's a lot more exciting than memorizing facts from a textbook.
Absolutely. And apprenticeships and mentorships provide that kind of immersive experience, you know, allowing students to develop valuable skills and explore their interests in a really meaningful way.
So we've got apprenticeships, mentorships, self-directed learning.
Mm-hmm.
What else does Gatto suggest? Are there any other models that he points to?
Well, he also emphasizes the importance of community involvement in education.
Okay.
He believes that schools should be more integrated into the community, with local businesses, organizations, and individuals all playing an active role in shaping the educational experience.
Okay.
So imagine local artists leading workshops in schools or businesses, providing mentorship opportunities to students.
That's a great idea.
Right.
It's about creating a more interconnected and supportive learning environment where the entire community is invested in the success of their children.
Exactly. And it helps break down those barriers between the school and the real world.
Right.
Making learning more relevant and engaging for students.
How realistic is all of this? I mean, our current education system is so entrenched, so bureaucratic. How do we even begin to shift towards these alternative models? Where do we even start?
It starts with conversations like the one we're having right now.
Okay.
It starts with raising awareness, challenging assumptions, and imagining new possibilities. Mm. It starts with recognizing that we have a choice, that we don't have to accept the status quo.
Right. It's about empowering ourselves and our communities to create the kind of education that we believe in. An education that truly serves the needs of our children and our communities. And for our listeners in Deer Park, LaPorte, and Pasadena, this is where Think and Act Locally comes in.
Absolutely.
We're here to provide you with the information and the resources you need to make those changes happen right here in your own backyard.
Exactly. You know, and it might feel daunting to think about changing the entire system.
Yeah.
But even small steps can make a difference.
Right.
Maybe it's starting up a mentorship program in your community or advocating for more hands-on project-based learning in your local schools. Hmm. Maybe it's simply talking to your children about their passions and helping them find opportunities to pursue those passions outside of the classroom.
I love that it's about taking action, however small, and recognizing that we all have a role to play in shaping the future of education.
We do.
It's about reclaiming our educational narrative and creating a system that truly empowers individuals and fosters a love of learning.
Mm-hmm.
And for those of you listening in Southeast Houston, mm-hmm. remember that you're not alone in this journey.
You're not.
Think and Act Locally is here to support you every step of the way.
Absolutely.
This deep dive has been a journey through the often hidden history of American education.
It has.
We've uncovered some unsettling trends, but we've also explored some really inspiring alternatives.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, the future of education is in our hands.
It is.
It's up to us as informed and engaged citizens to shape the kind of education we want for our children and our communities.
Absolutely.
This has been a truly thought-provoking conversation, and I know our listeners in Deer Park, LaPorte, and Pasadena are going to walk away with a lot to think about.
Yeah.
And hopefully a renewed sense of hope and possibility.
I hope so.
What's one final thought you want to leave our listeners with?
Remember that you have a choice. You can choose to be passive consumers of the education that's handed to you, or you can choose to be active creators of the education you want for yourselves, for your children, and for your communities. The power to shape the future of education lies within each of us.
Beautifully said. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us on this journey. We hope you found it informative, inspiring, and empowering. And if you're ready to take action and get involved in shaping the future of education in your community, check out our website and social media for resources and information. And if you found value in this deep dive, please consider supporting Think and Act Locally. Your donations help us continue to provide these essential conversations and empower residents to make a real difference in their communities. You'll find a link to donate in the show notes.
Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you next time on The Deep Dive.